Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in the Canadian Parliament recently gave an ovation to Yaroslav Hunka, an SS Nazi veteran who was honored during a session in which the Ukrainian leader thanked the lawmakers for their support against the Russian invasion of his country. The ovation happened when the Speaker of the House of Commons recognized a veteran from World War II who fought for Ukrainian independence against the Russians and continues to support the troops today, even at age 98. Lev Golinkin is a freelance journalist who's written extensively about the far right and Nazis. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg.
What do you think accounts for the fascination on the part of Western leaders with Ukrainian fascists, or could you even call it that? Is it that they're just not paying attention, they're ignoring who these people really are, or are they saying basically anything that gets in Russia's craw is a good thing?
Exactly. They're the good Nazis. They're the good Nazis. We use Nazis since before World War II even ended. We were hunting them down to use Nazi scientists, to use them for the space program, for the rocket program. And we use Nazi death squad leaders, Nazi collaborators left and right. We welcome them. I did a project on this for the Forward where I tracked down monuments, Nazi collaborators, and every other one, the biography was, and he moved to America and lived happily ever after, or he moved to Canada. So every other story there ends with he lived happily ever after, he moved to America, he moved to Canada. So we knew exactly.
And yeah, once in a while you do hear about Nazis being discovered and put on trial or extradited somewhere.
But they're a small majority. And actually, there's evidence that the CIA protected at least many of these Nazis and Nazi collaborators. For example, there's a Ukrainian Nazi collaborator called Mykola Lebed. He organized the slaughter, I mean, outright ethnic cleansing of 70,000 to 100,000 Polish villagers. They just went from village to village and they didn't even use bullets. They just cut these people down. And he was protected. The New York Times finally ran a piece about how the CIA protected him and threw Nazi hunters off of his trail, including those in the State Department, because he was considered a valuable intelligence asset because he still had people back in Soviet-occupied land. So he was considered that. And I mean, this is somebody who, beyond a doubt, was responsible for horrific atrocities with Poland. That's also one of the reasons why Poland's relationship with Ukraine is rocky right now. They're actually talking about extraditing the Nazi who spoke in parliament, the Nazi who was honored in parliament. They just now broke the story that they're working to see if there's any evidence in order to build a case for extraditing him.
What happened there in Canada in the parliament? They invited this guy to speak, or what was going on there?
Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, was speaking to Canada about them helping fund Ukraine in the war against Russia's, in resisting Russia's invasion. So the Speaker of Parliament then took a minute to honor a man who fought for Ukraine's independence in World War II, okay? And as soon as he said that, anybody who knows about how they whitewash these Nazis and Nazi collaborators knew exactly who this man was. The only question was, what unit did he fight in? That was the only question, okay? Because one of the biggest things they do is they came to America, they came to Canada, they presented themselves as fighters for freedom. They said, we fought against the Soviet Union. What they didn't add was that they fought in the ranks of the SS. They fought against the Soviet Union while fighting for Nazi Germany.
You write for The Forward, or have written for The Forward. Now, that's a fairly mainstream Jewish publication. And would you say that they kind of follow along with whatever U.S. policy is? Or is this an exception?
No, The Forward has been nothing but good. As they've let me, everything I came to them, everything, you know, I've done a gigantic piece about monuments to Nazis, Nazi collaborators across the world. I saw that the Southern Poverty Law Center has a database of Confederate monuments, and that gave me the idea that we should start one of Nazi monuments, because in studying neo-Nazis, I always saw that wherever you see armed men, angry men with torches, you also wind up seeing statues of Nazis. So I put it together after reporting for a while, and The Forward has been nothing but phenomenal in letting me write on this. That said, it's a pretty low bar to clear to write about Nazis. You know what I mean? It's
even the state of Israel, you know, when there was, for example, Nazis in Argentina, it seemed like they preferred to sell weapons to Argentina rather than to go after Nazis, as they have in other cases.
I'll give you even more. the Simon Wiesenthal Center has slammed Netanyahu, who has basically made a deal with groups like with the governments of like Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Hungary, in exchange for favorable votes. He turns a blind eye. He abets their whitewashing of Nazi collaborators. And I mean, Lithuania is one of the worst perpetrators of Holocaust revisionism. I mean, they're honoring butchers of Jews and butchers of anti-Nazi resistance. And Netanyahu had the gall to go there and say that they are, you know, in the forefront of Holocaust remembrance. You know, this country that's at the forefront of Holocaust perversion. And the Simon Wiesenthal Center slammed him. I wrote about him in the Washington Post, several others. So the biggest thing is now Jewish groups. It's not the, you know, it's not the Jewish media. It's the Jewish institutions that are now finally speaking out, because for a long time, it was just the Simon Wiesenthal Center and very few others. But now, especially in Canada. And just to give you an idea, you mentioned South America, okay? So the Nazis who went in South America at least had the decency, if that can be applied to Nazis, to keep a low profile, okay? The Nazis that went in America and Canada especially has a very, very strong Ukrainian Nazi collaborator. They admitted to taking in 2,000 SS Galicina members alone. Okay, that's Waffen-SS members that Canada took in, 2,000, at least 2,000. Mm-hmm. This is a country that lost 45,000 men fighting against Nazi Germany. So these people were loud and proud. Okay, they did the bare minimum to conceal themselves. They built monuments to themselves, and I've reported on it. There's a monument in Philadelphia. There's a monument in Detroit that has their Nazi SS insignia.
There's some on the left who have characterized the Ukrainian government as a fascist government. Do you think that's an exaggeration, or what's your take on that?
I think it's an exaggeration. I mean, it's what we basically have is a situation of the tail wagging the dog. Zelensky was democratically elected. He was the most democratically, you know, he was elected almost across the board in Ukraine. The
and he almost did a peace deal with Putin in 2022.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, he has cracked down on churches. He has cracked down on media and opposition parties. But if we're talking about honoring Nazis and Nazi collaborators, Zelensky has cracked down opposition party. He has cracked down the main church. But no, he's not a fascist. He's, in fact, he denounced SS Galichina. What Russia is doing is they're taking the small percentage of Ukrainians who worship these Nazi collaborators. The vast majority of Ukrainians, including Zelensky's grandfather, fought against the Nazis. Saying that these people are Ukrainian heroes would be like saying that Robert E. Lee is an American hero, is a hero for all of America.
Although the fascist militias have been integrated into the Ukrainian army.
Absolutely. It is not a fascist government. They have, and I've written extensively on this, they have at least two battalions, two brigades now, with fascists and neo-Nazis, and we should absolutely not arm them or empower them at all. They also, but for example, they will have like 1,000 people who march, you know, celebrating SS Galichina, this unit, okay? You can get 1,000 people in any country to celebrate anything. So Russia uses this as an example of every Ukrainian celebrates these people, which is really offensive on many levels. But unfortunately, Western media plays along with it because they'll do a story on this and they're like, you know, to some Ukrainians, these people are considered freedom fighters. Blah, blah, blah. When it's really just for a small percentage of Ukraine, why would the rest of the country that lost 2 million fighting against the Nazis, why would they worship Nazi collaborators?
Unless they have a short memory and they think, well, these are new kind of Nazis.
They walk past mass graves every day. They walk past mass graves on the way to get groceries. The most maddening thing about this is that the whitewashers, either of the Nazis or the neo-Nazis today in Ukraine, the Azov movement, they and Putin have a symbiotic relationship with each other. And I wrote about this in The Nation in a piece exposing the West's whitewashing of Azov, the main neo-Nazi units of the Ukrainian Armed Forces and National Guard. Putin uses them as an example to invade a sovereign country, which is to defend the indefensible. Okay, Azov and Azov's defenders use Putin as saying, you know what, Nazis are okay because these Nazis are okay because they fight Putin. And as a result, we have these neo-Nazis meeting with members of Congress. We have them being celebrated in Washington. We have them just being portrayed as heroes.
Although the U.S. does have a history of identifying with far-right forces in many countries, not necessarily Nazis, but still.
I mean, in World War II, like I said, we supported the original Nazis in many places. And afterwards, you know, especially in Central Europe and Eastern Europe. So listen, There's absolutely no doubt that Russia is engaging in bad faith. They're rehabilitating Stalin. They just put a statue up of Felix Dzerzhinsky, which was the original founder of the precursor to the KGB. They just put up a statue of him like a few weeks ago. So when Moscow says these things, it's despicable. They're engaged in celebrating their own monsters. But that said, that doesn't mean that Ukraine doesn't have an issue with honoring Nazi collaborators, for example. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we can hold the two things together. You can be the most ardent supporter of Ukraine. I mean, I think that the Russian invasion is a war crime. I do not believe that you should be allowed to invade a sovereign nation. You know, I'm watching my city get bombed, and where I'm from, Kharkiv today, you can support Ukraine all the way without supporting either the neo-Nazi contingent, which is very small, but should be zero, is what we should strive for, and without condoning the worship of Nazis, of actual legitimate Nazis. And it's scary that because of the war with Russia, these people have been given carte blanche. These people, they can do no wrong. They're, you know, they're the Teflon Nazis, to the point where I was really shocked that the Canadian Parliament wound up doing anything about this.
Because, what about the Biden administration? Have they said anything to criticize the Nazis?
They have not. I have once reached out to Antony Blinken, who flew into Kyiv a week after they had the SS Galichina march, the march in honor of this, and they said nothing. And they basically, the State Department gave me a blanket statement about how Nazis are bad and we resist Russian propaganda. And even Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, when he apologized for this, for what happened 2-3 days ago, he immediately pivoted to, we need to be wary of Russian propaganda and Russian disinformation. So the problem with the fact that he was enthusiastically honoring a Nazi as part of a war crime unit is not the fact that he was honoring a Nazi as part of a war crime unit, but really the bigger issue, it seems to be, as he shifted focus, on Russian disinformation. Where is the disinformation? Is he saying that the guy wasn't a Nazi? Is he, you know what I mean? It's the mindset of this. Also, I would be remiss not to mention Chrystia Freeland, who is, I believe, the deputy prime minister.
I think
she's
been minister of everything.
She's a foreign minister. I mean, she's one of the top people in Canada, one of the most powerful people in Canada, and by extension, the world. Okay, and this is an extremely powerful person, and she spent years lying about her grandfather. And again, we're not responsible for the sins of our grandparents. Okay, her problem wasn't that. Her problem was that she despicably claimed, on International Holocaust Remembrance Day, on other days, she would talk about, and I'm just paraphrasing here, I don't have the exact quote, but she would talk about basically her grandfather who was a war victim. You know, she said, you know, I understand, I get this when talking about genocides and everything, okay? Her grandfather wasn't a war victim. Her grandfather was a Nazi collaborator, a Ukrainian Nazi collaborator, who took over a newspaper from a Jew who was, from a Jewish owner who was executed in Auschwitz, who was murdered in Auschwitz, along with his entire family. And Chrystia Freeland's grandfather took this over and proceeded to churn out Nazi propaganda, inflaming hatred against Jews, inflaming everything. Okay, so this is this man. He's a war victim in the sense that, you know, Eamon Goeth, the Nazi psychopath from Schindler's List, is a war victim in the sense that if Chrystia Freeland's grandfather didn't get out of Poland, he would have been hanged from the nearest tree. You know, that's the only thing that makes him a war victim. Cynically present this, and this is, you know, she's not responsible for him. She doesn't have to even apologize, which she's not, but she went beyond that. She whitewashed him as a hero. And she incidentally was clapping also for this SS Galichina veteran. And so far, I have not seen an apology from her. So Canada, I mean, like I said, these people are not the types of Nazis who are kind of keeping a low profile in Argentina. These people build entire cemeteries celebrating themselves where every grave has a tombstone with Nazi insignia. Same thing in Philadelphia. We have 50 tombstones in the Philadelphia Catholic Church. I reported about this last month, with SS insignia just there and the giant monument saying Heroes for Ukraine. I mean, Tom Hanks had to run around collecting money from America for a World War II veteran memorial. Okay. We did not have a World War II veteran memorial until like 2001, something like that. Long before that, we had memorials to Nazis and Nazi collaborators on U.S. soil. We had memorials to the Nazis before we had memorials people already had a national memorial to the American troops that were killed. And to me, again, it's I'm a type of guy, I like to go for a common denominator. And it's no matter how we feel on things, I mean, this is something that should be a pretty easy thing about neither honoring Nazis nor celebrating neo-Nazis. You can have a lot of views while still adhering to that basic, you know, to those basic things.
One thing I heard was that Putin, when he talks about fascists in Ukraine, it's mostly for a rhetorical effect, and that what he's really concerned about is NATO putting missiles in Ukraine 6 minutes from Moscow, that kind of thing.
It's a double reason. It's a double reason. He needs to say something besides NATO. And Russia is a very diverse country. And what's holding it, one of the few things that's holding Russia together is the communal memory of World War II, which is far deeper and far more alive.
Because they lost so many people, yeah.
Because they lost, I mean, the amount of people is just, I'll put it better.
We can't even imagine.
Well, I'll put it this way, like, you know, I think, don't quote me on the number, I think it's like 420,000 Americans died in World War II totally. 420,000, okay? A giant number. 240,000 or 270,000, I need to look it up. Sorry, it's been a long day so far, okay? But I think about 270,000 people died in one battle for my city of Kharkiv, in one single battle, okay? More than half of all American casualties in one battle. And people from all the way from Siberia to Ukraine fought against the Nazis. And this is a communal memory to it. And so he's using this. And you wind up having this strange thing. I'll give you an example. There's an award-winning British historian, Anthony Beaver. He's a British historian, bestseller, just extremely successful, extremely legitimate, all of that. He wrote Stalingrad, for example. He does a lot in Eastern Europe. He has the dubious honor of being banned both in Ukraine and in Russia. For a while, his book was banned in the region of Russia because he wrote about the Red Army raping half of Europe on the way to Berlin. His book was also banned in Ukraine later because of a single paragraph in which he talks about Ukrainian nationalist force executing Jewish infants, which the Nazis outsourced to them. So, you know, we're just talking about both sides are just rewriting Holocaust, World War II history, whitewashing butchers, and we're good when it comes to calling out Putin and Russia, obviously. We're not very good at calling out Ukraine. We're far less good than that.
Lev Galinkin is the author of A Backpack, A Bear, and 8 Crates of Vodka, a memoir of Soviet Ukraine. He spoke with KGVM contributor David Rosenberg. This interview was released on October 19th, 2023.